Hi, I'm Peter Laws, and welcome back to the Flicks the Church Forgot. Tonight, I'm going to be speaking with the writer, producer, and director, Brian Usner. He's been a significant force in the world of independent horror for over 30 years. He's directed cult classics like Society and the squirm-inducing Dentist series of films. He's produced key Lovecraftian films, like, among others, The Underseen Dagon, the brilliant and thought-provoking From Beyond, and perhaps his most influential work, Reanimator. He's made everything from comic book superhero movies with a horror twist like Faust to tense and suspenseful alien abduction films like The Progeny. And perhaps his most left-field moment was also his most successful. He wrote and produced the classic Disney family film Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Now, his films are often controversial and at times surreal and even repulsive. But it's all done with an almost boyish enthusiasm that's hard not to enjoy. He's the man who brought us the first on-screen fight between a severed penis and a reanimated rat. But listen to him in conversation tonight and you'll find that, as well as his mischievous sense of on-screen humor, he's also a deep and thoughtful filmmaker. Tonight, the Flicks the Church Forgot are in conversation with Brian Usner. Brian, imagine you were at a dinner party and you were meeting people for the first time that didn't know the sort of things you do. How would you describe what you do and the type of things you produce?
Well, normally what I tell people, if they're not in the business and they don't know me, I say I'm a filmmaker and I make low-budget horror movies.
Yeah.
And then they kind of... they think, filmmaker, because everybody kind of likes that. Yeah. And then I say horror movies, so they kind of know where I'm coming from, that it's not going to be anything respectable. I say low budget, so they don't get the idea that somehow I'm dealing with John Travolta and Tom Cruise, or you know what I mean?
Yes.
So they kind of know so that they're not projecting anything particularly on me. And then they always say, the question that I'll get next would be, would I know anything that you made? And then my answer is, well, if you're a horror fan, you would.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you probably wouldn't. If they know a horror fan, or if they know somebody who's a horror fan, sometimes they say, oh, my wife is a horror fan. I don't really like those movies, but my wife is it. Or they say, oh, I just love Walking Dead.
Oh, yes.
Say, or every now and again, you'll get some grown up who actually is a horror fan. Mm. And if they're real horror fans, then there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Because they will know the movies. And they, you know, like the genre, who are real horror fans, are kind of odd types. That's kind of a very special type of cinephile. They know maybe Val Lewton, or they know Christopher Lee, or they know, you know, they'll know the 80s. People usually know the movies that were happening when they were, you know, kind of about 11 to 14, 15 years old. And
yes,
that's when they start getting into horror. So whatever they saw then really has an impact on them. And they reference that a lot. Mm. And I think we all do that, because people who like horror, usually the audience is usually the ones that are going through puberty. You know, that's the time, the psychological time of life, I think, where horror really works for you, because it's about sex and death.
Yes.
Two things that you are just really becoming aware of. Not that you're not aware of sex and death when you're younger. Mm-hmm. And I certainly was marked by my first horror movies when I was much younger.
Right.
Once they get into the 18, 20, 25, 30, you know, then it starts falling off. But for some reason, some small percentage of that group keep their interest even as they get older their whole life. And I don't know if that's like arrested development or, you know, I kept liking horror, but if I hadn't started making movies, it would have been it wouldn't have been something that I probably spent so much time with. Mm. It would have been something that I was kind of interested in, and I would probably mostly like the ones that I saw when I was a kid.
Yes. I think I heard you say once, related to what you've just said, is that in a sense, we're all, particularly us horror fans, are on a quest to rediscover that original thrill that we had as teenagers.
Yeah, I thought about this a lot. You have to first contextualize my comments, which is that I was first a horror fan, a movie fan. I was a horror fan. And then it wasn't until I was 30 years old, 32 years old, that I thought maybe I could make movies for a living. So I'm not that guy who wanted to be a movie director, who wanted to be a movie maker. Back when I was at that age that people today want to be that, everybody wanted to be a novelist.
Right.
When I was in high school, the college kids, the dream was to be, to write Catcher in the Rye, or to be Hemingway, or to be, to be Steinbeck, or to be a great novelist was the thing. That was the.
Did you have that dream?
No, I didn't. I read a lot. I was a big reader. Mm-hmm. I read a lot, everything. But I also went to tons of movies. And, this isn't, almost everybody you talk to in the movie business is going to tell you that they were crazy for movies. Mm-hmm. This is not uncommon. I just spent all my money going to movies all weekend. And I saw every type of movie. I wasn't limited.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the things that I really liked, and the things that I liked, stuff with the fantastic, fantasy, or what I now recognize as kind of expressionistic values, expressionism, surrealism. Mm. This type of thing is what the dream-like part of movies. The more fantastical, the stuff that you could never see in real life. Of course, I like the big epics as well. I like action. I like all this. But I would much rather see something where somebody went back in time, or went into a haunted house, or there was a vampire or a werewolf. This type of stuff got me. I think so. When I got into movies, I got in as a fan. And I think that for me, I learned about movies by being in the movie business, because I thought, wow, this is a great, when I first had my taste of, shooting and editing, and I was absolutely sold. I was determined. And that led to me, kind of going into the movie business. So there's a, when I think about why I did horror, it was because it seemed the thing that I felt most confident with. When I decided to put all my, everything always had to be, it had to have some kind of fantasy aspect. But horror, I felt like I understood it better. I felt more comfortable there. And I'm not sure why, but I do know that my earliest memories of movies had to do with horrific scenes. And I think most of the people I know who are real horror fans, and I have to say that in LA, there's tons of movie people. I mean, it's a great place to live if you like movies, because you can just socialize with people, and everybody is kind of an expert. Everybody has some angle or other. Even my really good friends who are really into movies, because a lot of friends I have own huge collections of movies, and even 16 millimeter back before Blu-ray. And they're real cinephiles, big time, you know. They'll have thousands of movies in their collection. They'll know so much about it. But most, I'm trying to think of any of them that I see on a regular basis who are specifically horror fans. They all will appreciate horror. Mm. They'll love horror. But they're not like me or like certain people I know like me to whom horror is much deeper than that. So much, there's much more of a connection. And I think the people like that, like myself, I trace it in my own life to being kind of traumatized by horror movies when I was a little kid, when I was at a very young age. And that trauma, I think I, you know, it really marked me, and it made me nauseous. I think when you, the feeling of horror, it includes kind of, I think, a feeling of nausea. And this nausea, nightmares, nausea, you know, I think that it's almost like, I always liken it to a drug, that people who become drug addicts, you know, they say the first time it makes them sick. Then they keep chasing that high.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the way horror works. It's like when I was young, I was fascinated by it. I was repulsed and fascinated. I didn't get to see that much because when I was growing up, there wasn't even TV in Panama where I grew up. But instead of being freaked out and never going near it again, it seems like I kept wanting to, it's kind of like I burned myself on the fire, but then I kept wanting to keep looking at the fire, getting closer, seeing how close I could get. And I think that at one point, I got to a certain age and saw a certain movie that in which I was able to, it was a fun horror movie. It was specifically House on Haunted Hill. And that movie was for kids, but it had real horror stuff. Mm. But I felt like I could be in control of it. Like I could enjoy the scares. And that was a big moment. Then, of course, I've seen stuff that really, you know, marked me. But as I got older, it seems like they quit working like that. And more than anything, I'm chasing that rush again, that nausea, that feeling of horror. And just like a dish that you maybe grew up with, you know, like that movie Ratatouille, you know. There's a dish that maybe your mom cooked. You know, it could be a pie. You know, it could be pasta. It should be some dish that you ate when you were growing up, and it may not be anything that great, but you grew up and it was so special to you, and you're probably chasing that feeling, that emotion that you get when you eat it. And I think horror and many, I think. Everything works that way, but we're talking horror, you know.
I think you've got a really good point, and I mean, I'm primarily like yourself. I'm a horror fan, and horror is more than just a genre that I like. It feels meaningful to me. It gives, it makes me think. It makes me ponder. But it's been meaningful to me since I was a teenager, or before that, since I was a young child, really, or getting into approaching 8, 9, or 10. But what I've found myself is that some people think because I like horror, I really enjoy real death, or that I enjoy the idea of actual violence happening in real life. And I try to explain to them, I think sometimes I feel almost disproportionately more disturbed by real death and real violence. And I sometimes use horror as a way of me trying to deal with the fact that I'm going to die one day or my loved ones will die. And but I find that for some people, they think horror is an opportunity for me to see a rehearsal of what I'd love to see in real life, that I'd actually like to sit and watch a man get his head chopped off.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think people who don't know horror, who aren't horror fans, I think this is a common misconception. Mm. And I'll give you the other side of that equation. I was at a film festival in Italy quite a few years ago, and I had dinner with a filmmaker, and I forget his name now. He was from South Africa, and he made a vampire movie in South Africa that was basically kind of an apartheid type movie. You know, a lot of people horror these days, and they try to make it very political because people, or they're either really concerned about that, or it's another thing that, you know, you get better reviews by critics that don't like horror. They say, oh, but it has, you know, Night of the Living Dead is awful, but oh, it's such a comment on society. Mm. And forevermore, George Romero now has been burdened with this idea that he has to have social commentary instead of just give you an effective movie. Mm. This guy from South Africa had a movie there. It was this vampire thing. And his brother had come in to enjoy the festival. And his brother was a big horror fan. His brother was a doctor who now worked ERs in London. But his main job was he was these Doctors Without Borders. He was part of that group where he was airdropped into like Angola or something and be in the middle of a tribal war where death was just rampant, where they're doing surgery 24 hours a day just trying to save a few of them. You know, just the worst, you know, grotesqueries, you know, the worst slaughter. And that was how he lived. This is what he did. And I asked him, I said, and he was a huge horror fan. And I said, my God, I said, you're just constantly in real death and gore. He says, how on earth could you be a fan of a horror movie? And he said, oh, because it's fake. It's fake. It's great. And I thought, wow, that's another way to look at it. But I understand what you say about, I think the reason kids that are in puberty like horror, because it's a way to try to understand the subconscious or the hormonal impulses that they have, they can't understand, and deal with the fact of dying in a safe way. Deal with fear in a safe way. Deal with the unknown in a safe way. Deal with these weird, twisted feelings that you might have. And I always think it's kind of like a roller coaster at a theme park. You could get in a car and get that sense of vertigo with your friends and drive like hell on a mountain road and get the fear and the excitement of it, and you could die. Or you could do it on a roller coaster and get that vertigo and that whole fear, but it's totally safe. And a movie is safe. A movie, you go into these really difficult and maybe morbid, maybe existential, maybe very frightening situations, and you get to feel it, but you know, the light's gonna come on and you're gonna walk out. So I do think that there is a whole issue of dealing with sex and dealing with death and dealing with pain and suffering that you get in a horror movie that is part of growing up.
Brian, I think I once heard you say in an interview that science fiction often can deal with political themes, but I think you said at one point that horror films are quite well placed to deal with religious ideas.
When somebody asks me, you know, it's always been interesting to me how you categorize things and what is horror? Because that's one of the things people often say. What's horror? Right after they ask, what's your favorite movie? What is horror? Oh, okay. Yeah. And I thought, well, you know what? If something's scary, if a movie's scary, you could call it a thriller. It's terror. But if you add fluids of some sort, it becomes horror. It can be blood, it can be goo, it can be water doesn't quite count. But if you add bodily fluids, it can be, that makes it horror. You take terror, add fluids, you've got horror. If you add metal, you've got sci-fi. to be the most absurdly simplistic about it. And with horror and genre movies, there's always been this apologetic. The critics always hate them because they, you know, there's you know, in my book, there's always been two roads of cinema. One is Méliès and one is the Lumière. And the Lumière's theory was the window on the world. Here's the people coming out of the factory. Here is the train station. And there is this whole critical theory which says movies should be the window on the world. Mm-hmm. And the more we see how the movie is made, the better it is. We don't want to forget. We want to see it as reality. Then Méliès was a magician, had a theater, and what he wanted was to do magic, use movies to make magic. Mm. And this became the sort of the bad movies. So critics have always dumped on the genre movies and lifted the ones that are naturalistic. And it's been it's been like that all the way through history. In this country, even though now critics can't afford to be against the public in the US, they've got to like the movies the public likes or they're out. That's not always been the case. And they still have they still try to have an elitist kind of view of what makes a good movie. So when a movie is successful and the critic didn't like it, the traditional critics, because it's a genre movie, it's a trash movie, then if it gets too successful, especially over the long term, then they have to justify why. So let's take the movie that I consider the beginning of the modern age of horror, at least for my life, and that would be Night of the Living Dead. And we see the Night of the Living Dead's influence now in the mainstream with Walking Dead and all these zombie movies. Night of the Living Dead, when I saw it, when it came out, was incredibly scary, incredibly disturbing. Mm. Very disturbing movie, very scary, a real horror movie. It has kept being so influential and so it was so effective that then when Romero, came back and did Dawn of the Dead, he just kept doing what he was doing. And he, it's usually when you try to keep, sequels tend to go to parody quite quickly. You immediately go to comedy. So Dawn of the Dead still had some incredibly disturbing horror scenes in it, but then it also had the shopping zombies. And that was funny. And people liked that. And they didn't, I think they liked it because, the audience liked it because it was funny. The critics explained that, and the critics explained why they might like it or why people, because they said, oh, this is a satire. It's a commentary on consumerist culture. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. George Romero being so successful with Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, by the time he got to Day of the Dead, he was just a cheap movie maker. Now he was a social critic. He was a political filmmaker. And if you look at Day of the Dead, you'll see that except for the zombie stuff, which is pretty incredible by what's his name, Tom Savini. I mean, the zombie stuff in Day of the Dead is quite amazing, but all the parts of the story and acting seem to be, in my read, they seem self-consciously social commentary.
Okay.
And then you start, then you kind of go, oh, well, that's what happens. And just as you get older, you tend to start in the movies, you tend to start to want to do other things. So George Romero, I'm just using him as an example, because, hey, he's probably the filmmaker. I mean, certainly have been others that are more successful, but there's been nothing as key, I think, as Night of the Living Dead. I think that he tried doing other kinds of stuff. He did Knight Riders.
Yes.
Nothing to do with horror. He tried to do the Funhouse. He did Martin, which I thought actually was quite good.
Yes.
He did, but these things weren't working. He had to go back to his hit. And he tried doing other horror. But the problem is that you can't break, you know, just because you had a successful horror movie doesn't mean that you're going to be good at comedy or that you're going to be good at drama. Look at what's his name of Wes Craven. Mm-hmm. He did a nasty little movie, House on the Left. He did kind of almost as nasty, The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these were pretty, they were just going for the, let's get the audience. Let's get the grindhouse audience. And he tried doing Swamp Thing. And then he did Nightmare on Elm Street. Bang, that became the biggest movie of the 80s, I think. It became where all the new effects came, and Freddy is probably he's the Frankenstein of this, certainly my generation. You know, you've got Leatherface, you've got Freddy, and you've got Jason. But come on, Freddy is really, he's got a personality.
Yeah.
Right? But Wes Craven just, you know, he didn't want to be, I think he was a real horror fan, because back then I had had dinner with him and stuff at festivals. And he's certainly not a guy who is just doing a horror movie because, you know, the way a lot of people do today is they do it because they think this is the way into the movies. Mm. You do a horror movie. And you can feel it with their movie. But Wes Craven still had to try to get, you know, he tried doing that violin movie. He just wanted something respectable, and all he had was lots and lots and lots of money. You know? But you can't, just because you want to, go out, you know. But anyway, I think that this idea that you make a political movie, like People Under the Stairs, seems to me that was overtly political.
Right.
There's a lot of scenes in it that you could see the filmmaker wanting to show that he wasn't just doing a horror movie, because by that time doing a horror movie wasn't enough. It didn't get him off enough, you know. And so that's, you know, with me, I think in one way, I've made too many movies that didn't work. So I'm still trying to make a couple good ones. So I've never had to deal with that. You know, if I had made a few real, obviously Reanimator's a classic, I produced it. You know, you want to try to redo it. Society has been reborn. It's been rediscovered. But luckily now that it's so much older and it's from another time, people kind of, they forgive or just, they just interpret the clumsy parts of that movie as being, wow, it's so 80s. Actually, it's kind of like when you watch a Japanese horror movie or something, you go, why would she do that? Oh, it's their culture. You go, no, it's not. It's really stupid, okay? But forgive it, because it's in their culture. Mm. And I think, and so I think a lot of the, you know, I would still like to make a couple of good horror movies. I'm not that interested in making that violin movie or that, or the political movie, although you would say that Society's a political movie, but I don't know. I don't quite see it that way. I saw it as like kind of another type of alien movie.
Yeah.
But Alien is political, so you're back into it. Anyway, the point I'm making is when people talk about politics, and I'm always dealing with people that I'm producing or I'm working with somebody, and they start talking about what the allegory is that this horror movie is. And I always try to fight against that. Right. I say, of course it's going to reflect the world we're in. Don't do it consciously. And, they want to make a political point. And I'm kind of like, you know what? Leave that for sci-fi, because sci-fi does naturally deal with politics. Naturally. Sci-fi is like that. It's about what's going to happen in the future. A horror movie, a horror story, a scary story, I think it deals with psychology and religion. And I think another reason why I feel like I was drawn to the horror movies, one of the things that kind of reinforced my interest was that I grew up in a third world country, very small tropical country, where for most of the time I was in grammar school there. We didn't even have TV until a certain time because the country didn't have it.
Right.
And then it was there for a few hours a day. So we had the movies, but you went to the movie on Sunday. You had the stories on the street corner, the ghost stories.
Yeah.
And you had church. And I grew up as a Catholic, a Roman Catholic. And my father was a practicing Roman Catholic his whole life. He wasn't a proselytizer. My mother wasn't Catholic, and she was pretty much agnostic. And she just went along because that's what she'd signed off on when she got married. Mm-hmm. So they'd send us to our catechism and all this. And I was I was really drawn to the whole, to the religious thing. I was really one of those guys that I really thought about it. And the thing about Catholicism, and especially when you're in a third world country where they actually carry crosses through the streets and candlelit marches, it's very heavy. And where the church is the most fantastic kind of place that you would see, you know, it's not like a country full of skyscrapers, you know. And in the church, there's all, you know, it's all about, you know, certainly with Catholicism, it's very mystical. And it's all about the flesh transforming.
Yeah.
You know, and pain and suffering being a redemptive element. And so you see statues of, you know, saints with their skin ripped off. The stories about how they suffered. I thought the best horror movie of the year that year was Mel Gibson's The Passion of Christ. I went, wow, this is a good horror movie.
Yes.
Everything. And in fact, most action movies also, action movies has started co-opting the gore about around the time of the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Action movies used to not have any blood in them. Then they started really having gore, and they started competing with horror. You used to have to go to horror for gore. But you look at a horror movie and you look at an action movie and you see that Passion of Jesus thing happening. You know, the guy Sylvester Stallone or the girl in Halloween, they've got to get beat up, they've got to suffer, they've got to be beat to shit and crawl back for redemption. Mm. And that's the way an action movie works, you know? And that's the way a horror movie works. There's always somebody that has to get through the night, has to, and the more they're threatened, the more they're scared, the better, you know, the more they're tortured, the more they're the more suffering they go through, they come out the other end. And I often have thought that certainly the kind of horror that we deal with, and I always say, well, horror as a genre is really works best in you know, Christian and especially Catholic cultures. Mm. Because over to the East, you know, there's good ghosts, there's bad ghosts, there's good vampires, there's bad vampires. People turn into this and that, but you don't have that moralistic, that clear story, and it's basically the story of Jesus being hit, beaten over the head in so many different ways.
That's fascinating.
You know, and if you believe in, and if you, you know, I was always fascinated by the idea, hey, the Mass is a cannibalistic ritual. So they say, here's the blood and here's the flesh. Mm. Eat it. I don't know. I mean, do you need any more specifics about eating flesh and drinking blood? Mm. And the transmutation of the flesh, the idea of the flesh, you know, being more, or somehow being part of the spirit. Boy, you go to a high Mass, you've got a real movie there. Mm. You know, it's just heavy shit, you know? And I think you think about the Christian mythologies, just every kind of, if the devil is real, then every kind of horror movie trope can be real. Mm. You're not dealing now with like Calvinism or something. Mm. You know, you're not dealing even in, you know, there's certainly Christianity where they don't believe in anything fantastic. But hey, Catholics, it's very mystical. And that's a kind of real, to me, that really attracted me. And horror certainly had the same elements and dealt with the problem of pain and suffering and blood and mysticism and death. All this stuff is certainly represented in horror. And I read someplace, some theologian or something said, horror movies were misguided spirituality. Oh. People who are interested in horror, they were interested in spirituality, and they kind of got to the wrong, they're looking in the wrong place. Mm.
But I was going to ask you a couple of quick questions before we go, if that's okay. Firstly, what are you working on anything at the moment? Anything you would like to flag up for us?
Well, I'm trying to get some reanimator projects going. It's very tough because, of course, I'm working on a sequel to Society. Oh. And I'm working on another movie with Corbin Burnson, who was the dentist.
Yes.
We call the plastic surgeon. I've got a project that I'm doing with John Penny, who wrote Return of the Living Dead 3, called The Pope. And it's a movie, a novel, and a graphic novel. Okay. And it's about a guy who dresses up like the Pope and kills pedophile priests. it starts as a psycho killer movie, but it ends up as like a superhero origin movie. Yeah. Sort of a faith-based movie.
Do you think you'll ever make the movie The Men, the concept you had with Dan O'Bannon?
We tried, and I tried to do it with Stuart a few years ago, and I don't know, it just wasn't going anywhere. I'm wondering if the concept itself has, I'm wondering if it's kind of outlived its era. You know, I'm not sure. But I don't see it now, no. We tried just like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, which we tried to revive it, and Stuart was going to direct it, and we got he got the rights to the script from Dan's widow, and we tried to get it financed. And you know, right now I just can't get financing. I used to always, I made movies because somebody wanted a movie, and then we quickly found a movie to make.
Yeah.
And ever since the you know, Great Recession, and there's been so many changes in the market because there's no DVD anymore, and it's just, I've just not been able to get financing. Plus, I'm getting older, so, you know, it's not like people are rushing around trying to work with the old guy. You know, it's like, hey, let's work, you know, when I started making movies, I didn't go, hey, I want to work with that old guy that reminds me of my dad, you know. I don't think I want to have a guy around that reminds me of my dad. You know? So there's that, you know, and you don't really have much, you have less promise as you get older. It's not like, it's kind of like what you do, or you kind of know what you do.
Right.
You know, probably ain't going to change. You know? And you're probably not as willing to just do anything, you know. But I certainly would like to make a living, and I'd love to make a few more movies.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you will, and I'll be excited to see them. Brian, thank you so much for speaking to us on so many different subjects. I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.